from her husband. What does the word depart mean?
Separate.
Okay, separate. The same word that is used for depart here. Basic word, charizo. Same word that is used here is also used over in Matthew, the 19th chapter, verse 6, where the Lord Himself is addressing marriage and divorce. So it actually means divorce. In this context, it actually means divorce. He says that the wife should not depart. Then he gets down to the husband, and he says the husband is not to divorce his wife. The word divorce is another Greek word. It isn't the same one as the root from charizo. But the idea is the same thing. He's married. He should not divorce his wife. The wife should not divorce her husband. Now, there was a situation under the Roman rule back in the early part of the first century where a wife could not divorce. She could not initiate a divorce. I don't know when this came about, but here there is the possibility that she can depart or divorce her husband. Now, to the married I commend, yet not I, but the Lord. The wife is not to depart from her husband, but even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband, and the husband is not to divorce his wife. So the idea is still the same thing that the Lord talks about in Matthew 5 and Matthew 19. She can divorce, fine. But if she does, and it's not recommended, but if she does, then she's to remain unmarried. The same thing's true with the husband. Even though it doesn't say that. He's to remain unmarried also. Why?
Still bound?
Well, we're going to find out. I'm glad you brought that word up, because we're going to be looking at it in a minute. He's still bound. They're still bound. But we're going to see about this bondage or being bound discussed by the apostle here in just a little bit. They still have a responsibility. When God created man and woman, and He instituted the institution of marriage, how long was it supposed to last?
The death do them part.
Okay. The death do them part. So it was supposed to last forever. Part until death do them part. And we'll pick up on that also down in verse 39. So, is there any questions concerning what Paul is saying here in verses 10 and 11? The commandment has already been given to the given by the Lord. Okay. Although it's not considered part of the difficult passages, beginning in verse 12, he says, "But to the rest, not the Lord, to the rest I, not the Lord, say." Now wait a minute. To the rest, not the Lord, I say. Is it the apostle giving opinion?
He's written by the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, but isn't he giving opinion.
His opinion on what the Lord said about it.
Well, the Lord didn't say it. Okay. Dennis Craig has a lovely wife and he has 6 lovely daughters. For the most part, I respect Dennis Craig's word. But he can have his opinion, and I can have my opinion, and we may disagree. But it's still an opinion. Everybody's got one. Everybody's got an opinion. Some of us are more vocal than others. Might ought to not have an opinion as we do, but that's neither here nor there. But you're right. The Apostle Paul is still directed by the Holy Spirit. Before Jesus' ascension into heaven, he told the apostles. Now, Paul wasn't there, but he was instructed later by the Lord. But he told the apostles, said, I'll send a comforter who will guide you in all truth. When he was writing to Timothy, Paul said, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. All of it. So he's writing a letter and we're looking at what he has to say. The Lord did not specifically address what he's about to say. Not while here on earth. And it's Paul's opinion based upon things that the Apostle Paul knew because he was an apostle. Paul can see and knows about the imminent troubles that are to come upon the Corinthians. Might as well get started with that. In Rome, the great fiddler Nero is on the throne. And he's already burned Rome and he wants to lay the blame on someone, so he's blaming the Christians. So he's persecuting Christians at the time that Paul is writing this letter. And this persecution is going to continue for years into the future. It's going to get more severe, especially when Domitian ascends to the throne back about 81. But Paul knows what is about to happen to these people, so he can make these statements that he's about to make. And he continues in verse 12. If any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she is willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. There is a willingness on the part of the unbeliever. And in this case, it's the wife. There's a willingness for the unbeliever to live with her husband who is a Christian. And his instructions are not to let him divorce her. And a woman who has a husband who does not believe, if he is willing to live with her, let him not divorce him. So the responsibility goes with the believer that as long as the unbeliever is willing to live with the believer, let them continue to live together. He has a responsibility, he or she, the believer, has a responsibility toward that unbeliever. And he's going to elaborate on that in just a moment. Any questions or comments about 12 or 13? Dick?
It seems to me that in verse 12 and 13 is not speaking to a Christian that marries a non-Christian. It seems to me to talk about those that neither one of them are Christians and one obeys the gospel. And so the other one is does not obey the gospel,
so
it's a non-believer.
Okay.
And it seems like it's speaking of that rather than somebody married, that's a child of God married.
Why?
Christian. I mean, and for the same rules will apply, but it seems like it's talking about marriage before they relationship.
Well, there could have been Jews in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost that heard the gospel preached and obeyed it, and then they got married afterwards. Married a non-believer. It's really immaterial. When they got married, the principle is the same, like you say. The principle is the same. They still have a responsibility to continue that marriage whether they got married before one of them became a Christian or whether one of them was a Christian and married. It's still the same. Anything else? Go ahead, Cal.
Okay. Verse 14, at the very end of it, it has that, but now they are holy. So, divorcing or giving up the marriage or just, you know, putting it in the trash can, it gives instant results and keeps you away from this goal of being holy as a family unit. And so, therefore, this is the reason these verses are saying this or pointing in this direction, so the family unit can be holy.
Okay. And by the way, that's on verse or page 5, and we're still on 4, but we're going to get there. We're going to address that in just a moment. Armando. No.
We'll discuss it earlier.
Jerry.
We also see the difference between the Old Covenant and the New Covenant here. Both Ezra, the men were told to leave their wives because they were holy wives, and that was against the law. Here we see the New Covenant change.
Okay. And you and Kyle have brought that out. We might as well get into it. In verse 14, see how we just transition right into that. I mean, slipped into it. Okay, in verse 14, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife. What does he mean, sanctified?
Cleansed.
Set apart, cleansed. How is the unbeliever sanctified by the believer? Does that mean, as our Catholic friends believe, that you can do your thing and live a Christian life and save the unbeliever?
No.
Okay.
No. Because they're one flesh, that's the reason.
Okay. But go back to what Jerry was talking about. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise your children would be unclean, but now they're holy. Jerry mentioned what was happening under the old law. Under the old law, The Israelites were specifically instructed not to marry or intermarry with the nations around them. Why? Do what? Exactly. Because of the fact that the nations around them, or the people from the nations around them, would lead the Israelites into idolatry. And it happened. Even someone as wise as Solomon, he allowed it to happen. In his own family, he allowed it to happen because he took wives from many nations. But under the old law, they were instructed not to marry from the nations around them. When Ezra came back to Jerusalem, out of captivity, back to Jerusalem, he was instructed by some of the priests who had not been taken away that the people were marrying from the nations around about them. You can turn over to Ezra chapters 9 and 10 and see where this is so. He had a It really upset Ezra when he heard that. He tore his clothes. He bowed down to the ground, and he wept because of what had been going on since the captivity. And all of the Israelites who had married foreigners, I think it was either 3 or 4 days that they were given to rectify that problem. They were told to leave. They were told to leave their foreign wives. Sounds like a cruel thing, doesn't it? But God made a statement. I don't want you living with these other people because they'll lead you into idolatry.
Doesn't this also show that it's not a one-time thing? They were continuing to live, so they had to correct that by putting the wives away.
Exactly. That's why earlier I pointed out that the word married indicates it's a continuing thing. Yes, you're absolutely correct. And that's the difference between what was happening with the Israelites and what is happening in Paul's time there in Corinth. There's a difference. As long as the Israelites continued or stayed with the foreign women, if they stayed beyond the 3 or 4 days, and like I say, I don't remember which it was, then they were going to be ostracized also. But believing a husband is sanctified by the wife, and the believing wife is sanctified by the husband, that rule no longer applies under the Christian dispensation. there's a sanctification towards God, but this is different. This is the marriage itself between a believer and an unbeliever. Is under the Christian dispensation isn't like the one that where the Jews were required to marry within the Israelites or Israelite nation. Does that make sense? And by the same token, he continues, otherwise your children would be unclean, but now they're holy. So apparently someone was looking at the children of an unbeliever and a believer and saying their children is unholy, but that's not true. Because he says now they are holy. Because the marriage itself between a believer and an unbeliever is acceptable. Any further questions or comments? Jerry? Yes, it is. It certainly is. Justin?
Question of leaven and purity. And so God called the Israelites to be a pure nation, and they can't marry outside of the nation with the influence of prayer. And now we have a different nation, a holy nation, a royal priesthood. And we're told the exact same thing as far as keeping the purity of that nation. If you go back into chapter 5, and they're told you can't let these influences into your number, that's a leavening influence that's going to contaminate. But I didn't tell you to keep away from the immoral of the world, otherwise you'd have to go out of the world. So the church itself is supposed to be loving influence on the entire world. And in this case, where you've got the believing spouse and the unbelieving spouse, the believing spouse is supposed to be loving influence on the unbelieving spouse. There are plenty of cases where I've seen a faithful Christian and an unbeliever in a household, and the unbeliever's buddies don't want to come over to his house because the wife certainly wasn't going to be fixing him any drinks. She certainly wasn't going to be approving of the things they were wanting to go do. So any of those things like that, they always went to someone else's house, which in that effect, you know, she was acting as a shield for her children, making sure that those negative influences coming into the house and she's protecting the children. And so the children grew up in a house where the dad had drunk a lot and did various other things. But they still said they grew up in a Christian household as far as how she maintained what she was able to. She maintained a Christian household.
That's true too. But again, the requirement that was put upon the Israelites isn't a requirement that's put upon us in this covenant. Anything else?
Very quickly, this keeping the family together, if you live with non-believers, requires an incredible understanding and practicing of how to love the mirror to exhibit the commandment. Love myself as thy neighbor. So that love is really exemplified through this example.
Okay. Going back to what Justin was saying. If we look at the current situation, we've got a, let's say, an unbelieving wife and or a believing wife and an unbelieving husband. Let's go over to see what Peter had to say over in 1 Peter 3 in the first couple of verses. It says, likewise, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands. Okay, that's a requirement. That even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. The lives that we live can be a sermon. Now let's suppose, take the same situation. We've got a believing wife and an unbelieving husband, and it happens. If she nags him, and that happens from time to time too, if she nags him and constantly on him to change his ways, how effective is she going to be?
She could be effective, could not be. She depends.
But in all probability, and I'm looking at my own parents, my mom was a Christian. My dad was not. For years and years and years. He was a drunkard. Abused her. He abused us kids. And for a while, I remember earliest recollections. She would. Why don't you go to church with me? Why don't you go to church with me? And we lived about 10 miles from town. Out of the country, so she would have to get the kids together, and there were six of us. Get the kids up on Sunday morning and get us dressed and wash, make sure our faces were clean. Well, they were when she got through with us, anyway. But and take us to church, and then why don't you go with us? Why don't you go with us? For years and years and years, he didn't. And then he did. Not because she kept asking him, but because of her persistence, the way she lived. He went with her. And he continued to go with her. And he obeyed the gospel. If it hadn't been for the way she lived, it had never done it. And the whole family was ostracized by his family because we were Christians and we thought we were the saved ones and everyone else was going to hell. But he lived with it. Up until the time that she died and he got cancer and was in a lot of pain, and then he went back to his old life again. So, but it was her life that changed him for a while. But anyway, the husband is sanctified, but he's not sanctified in that he's not set apart or that he's not saved without all of the requirements that one must do in order to be saved. Everyone, according to Paul in Romans 14, is going to give account to their own actions. Ezekiel said basically the same thing. We're going to give an account for our own actions. Man must have faith in order to be saved, as Jesus mentions in Mark 16:16. So the unbeliever is not saved by the life of the believer. Okay, verse 15. But if the unbeliever departs, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage. Now we're coming to your word. Not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace.
Now there's a difference between a bond and bondage.
Okay.
Bondage here talk about being not being a slave.
Okay. But and he says
we're talking about the marriage bond.
Well, he's saying that she can go.
Because she's not in a bond. It doesn't say divorce, it just says he can let him go. You're not a slave. You can go. Let him go because you're not a slave.
Okay. Then if she goes, is she able to remarry?
No, she's still got the bond is still there, the marriage bond is still there.
Okay. So the bondage that he's talking about here is actually what we consider a legal bondage. We live in a world of laws. We live in wherever we may live. We have laws that govern marriage. We have laws in place that can cause a divorce. That doesn't mean that we have to accept those laws. And as a matter of fact, a Christian can't. We can go to the courthouse. If the unbeliever takes us to the courthouse and says, I want a divorce, Paul's saying, okay, you can go. The laws of the land says that you can get a divorce. You get a divorce. But as Jerry pointed out, we still have a responsibility to the bondage according to the law of God. We're still bound to that individual. Does that make sense?
According to verse 39, it does.
Well, I ain't got there yet.
We're bound rather than bondage.
Well, it's the same thing, isn't it? Gonna come from. I'm getting there, Dick. I'm pedaling as fast as I can, but yes, sir.
I heard Brother Jim Everett explain this in relationship to verses 3 and 5, where that you would not be under bondage to keep this marital relationship or responsibilities that you have. Let them go. You're not under bondage to maintain those things anymore.
Okay. That's it. You're not under bondage because the laws of the land, you have to respect those too. You have to respect those too. Providing you still put the priority where it's supposed to go, and that being your obedience to God. Anything else? Dennis?
Don't want to muddy the waters.
Go ahead.
Sometimes I can do that, so don't let me.
That's your opinion.
Exactly. You just said that a while ago, didn't you? But when Paul's addressing the questions that the Corinthians have, verse 20 says, now considering the things which you wrote to me, if you're not married, this is the way you handle it. Verse 10, now to the married, you've got questions about you're already married. Now, this is what I want you to do. So she's married. She's been converted. She's married to this Greek, like Timothy's. He's not happy about it. You just read in 1 Peter 3:1 that she's to be submissive to her own husband, whether he's a Christian or not.
That's correct.
She has to be submissive to him. That even if something doesn't obey the word, they might, you know. But either way, she's supposed to be submissive. What's the one exception to that?
Tell me.
When can a wife not be submissive to her husband?
When it violates the word of God.
So if he tells her, I'm leaving you, unless you leave this religion, unless you renounce this thing that you've done, she says, I'm not going to do that. I am not bound to obey you in this. I cannot obey you in this. So go. And he does. That's just another possible explanation.
Okay. Anything else? Cal?
Back in Peter again, as you pointed out, we are to consistently try, through our example of being a Christian, to conduct our lives, to be doing of the party person or the weak person, and our health problem just is that brand. Anyway, we are not to conduct ourselves regardless of the circumstances or the results that would happen, but to continue in this activity and not to worry about the results, but we must be consistent in our lives with our conduct.
Okay.
What was his point?
I can't hear.
Said, what was his point?
I can't hear.
I didn't hear a word. I was
hoping these people heard. I can't. I'm sorry, Cal. I can't hear.
I can tell Jeff. Can you hear me now?
Yes, even I can hear you now.
Okay. With you being an example of a believing person, a Christian person, that is not to rely upon the results of this trying to persuade, but you just keep consistently, day after day, trying to be the shining light.
Correct. Yeah. Just because you marry an unbeliever don't mean you put the light out. You don't hide it under a bed. You can still try to live it. Anything else? Dick, you raise your hand, buddy. I'm going to call him. Jerry.
I'm with Dennis. I think that's the best explanation myself. In verse 10 and 11, they already learned this, that you're not supposed to separate from your spouse. You know, that's a law, right? That's our general principle here. But in these situations where one or the spouses have become a Christian, what do you do if they're making a demand on you to have to leave the faith or make you choose your marriage or your faith? In other words, you have to leave your faith. If they married me, then let them go. You're not under obligation to stay with them and leave the faith.
Well, I was reading one commentary, and this is one of the dangers of relying too much on commentaries anyway. Because the best commentary is the Bible itself. But the guy got over to this matter, and everything was going fine up until he got down to talking about this bondage. You're not under bondage. And if she wants to go, let him go. And then here he comes. Now there's two times that a person can remarry. One is sexual fornication, as the Lord himself mentions in Matthew 5 and 19. And the other is here what Paul says, that the bondage is broken. You're no longer under bondage to that individual, so you can remarry. And I just threw up my hands and said, I don't need that commentary anymore. So, but you got to be careful with what you read. Appreciate the comments. Stan can take up there next time.